The leading question, what will Congress do on major economic matters? From Washington, D.C., CBS Radio presents The Leading Question, a spontaneous and unrehearsed transcribed discussion. Now, here's the moderator of the program, Wells Church.
Congress is reconvening amidst speculation on how it will handle, or manhandle, the administration's legislative programs, and most attention is currently being given proposals for tax revision, medical care for the aged, and for liberalizing the Reciprocal Trade Act. In short, the economic factor, money matters, will be a major consideration as the House of Representatives and the Senate begin the second session of the 87th Congress. We have two guests, well qualified by their interests and their committee assignments, to discuss today's leading question, what will Congress do on major money matters? From the Senate side of the Hill, we have Senator Jacob K. Javits of New York. And from the House, we have Representative Hale Boggs of Louisiana. Mr. Javits is a Republican, Mr. Boggs a Democrat. Both legislators are members of the Joint Economic Committee. Senator Javits is also on the Senate Banking and Currency Committee, and Mr. Boggs is a member of the House Ways and Means Committee. Senator Javits, to start us off, what do you feel Congress will do on major money matters in this session of Congress?
Well, I think there's a good chance to get a bill for medical care for the aged. I believe that on our tax program, we're likely to have not too much done, though I do look for incentives for capital goods development and capital goods acquisition, that is, new machining, et cetera, and helping automation. And in the trade picture, we've got to act in some fashion. And I deeply believe that though we may not meet the president's expectations in full, we will go a long way toward inaugurating a new trade policy with an emphasis on the expansion of exports for the United States.
Mr. Congressman?
To supplement a revision of the foreign economic policy, it is also necessary to revise the tax structure of the United States. I say that because we are faced with the growing common market, with new competition, and with an industrial plant in the United States, which is now somewhat older than the industrial plant in the common market countries. This can be corrected by encouraging American investors to invest in new plants in the United States. And this can be done by a revision of the tax structure, which I think will occur in this present session of the Congress.
While we're on this particular subject, what about plant and equipment abroad? Is anything going to happen in that area this time?
I presume, Mr. Church, you mean the investment by Americans.
That's right. Yes.
In plants and equipment abroad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those who feels that, by and large, this has not been a bad thing. At the present time, that it may be that there's been too much emphasis on such investment in the so-called developed countries. If we could encourage such investment in the underdeveloped countries and maybe have it taper off a bit in the developed countries, we might be in a better economic condition. But let us remember that in this whole discussion about exports and imports, balance of payments, and all of these other terms we use, our return from investments abroad has been a plus and not a minus.
Wow.
So that, by and large, this has been helpful to the American economy rather than harmful.
Congressman Boggs, I would like to, one, record the fact that I feel as you do on that subject, and two, make a very sharp distinction with respect to the matter. You've got to remember that it's one thing to invest abroad in facilities which are destined to enable American companies to compete in the export field with their European competitors. It's another thing to invest abroad with any idea of reshipping that material which is manufactured abroad to the United States. Now, it seems to me that that should be the thrust of our law rather than the way Kennedy has got his bill set up now. In other words, if American companies are better able to compete abroad for export business, then they use materials, semi-finished products, and other things from the United States, which enhances our business opportunities and enables us to get into markets we might otherwise lose. On the other hand, if you have a company that's just going to transfer its operations abroad, and then think it's going to ship its stuff back here because there are lower weight scales abroad, that represents a very real element of unfairness to the American economy if it is keeping up competitively. So that I would like to join with Congressman Boggs, as I understand his view, in the feeling that the superficial idea that American, that just because Americans put money in a plant abroad means they're depriving the United States of something is untrue. We've got to probe beneath that in order to get to the real significance of the economic development which is taking place in order to determine that it's good or bad for our country. Much of this, as I agree with Congressman Boggs, is very good for our country.
Well, as I see it, we are really entering a new period in our foreign economic policy. The old Hull trade program enacted in the mid-30s was a good program for the war years and the years immediately thereafter. But now we live in a different kind of world. Number one, we see the communist, the Soviet bloc, using trade as a political weapon. The penetration of the European oil market is a good example. The taking of entire Cuban sugar crop is another example. The movement of Egyptian cotton to the Soviet bloc is another example. So number one, we must understand what Soviet economic penetration is. Number two, the common market is an outstanding fact in this year, of this year, 1962. And we must be in a position where we can deal with the kind of world in which we're living. So that, in my opinion, Mr. Church, economic legislation or money legislation, whatever you want to call it, will be the most important problem facing this session of Congress.
Let's talk about that committee of which you're chairman, Chairman Boggs of Louisiana, the Joint Economic Committee. You're finished with the hearings, I understand, and but the report is still to come.
Yes.
My recollection is, listening to the testimony, it seemed to encourage lower tariffs and intimate cooperation with this European common market. At the same time, the Small Business Committee at the other end of the Capitol held hearings at which some witnesses expressed fear for labor and business. Now, with that as a background, I'd like to hear you two gentlemen talk a little bit about this problem of this European common market. How are we going to get with it, or should we stay away from it?
Well, if I may just chime in at this point with respect to this matter, let us remember that you face new equations in the world, not only the European common market, but, as has just been stated so properly by Congressman Boggs, communist economic competition, including very serious competition in trade, because the communists focus their trade and use it for political purposes. And though it only amounts to 6% of the world's trade today, as against the 94% for the free world, it is still very significant strategically. They can break free world markets. They can push us out of them, out of a particular market, and thus they use trade essentially for political purposes. Now, beyond that, and to my mind, overwhelming every other consideration is the fact that we're going to win or lose the struggle for freedom in the new areas of the world. The Russians know that. I was just there. Congressman Boggs, as a matter of fact, authorized my trip in order to study the problems of trade between ourselves and the Soviet bloc. They think they're going to beat us in these newly developing areas. And the matter of our working with a common market, rather than fighting with a common market, is essentially directed toward the totality of increasing the whole export trade of the world. One of the great difficulties in our country is that people think the trade is static. It's not static. It's been said, for example, properly, that if every person in India had an extra cotton shirt, it would keep all the cotton mills of the world so busy that you'd have undercapacity. In short, what we're trying to do is to stimulate the world's development by giving people a better chance for goods. And the only way you're going to do that is not by fighting with each other for a limited market, but by joining together in order to develop the biggest market possible. That is why, in my opinion, we dare not, in the interests of world peace, I'm not talking now about trade and money, in the interests of our own survival, engage in a cat-and-dog struggle with a common market for a limited amount of trade, instead of together going out to expand the trade.
Well, Mr. Church, you referred to the hearings held a few weeks ago before the Joint Economic Committee. Those hearings, I thought, were most informative. Incidentally, the witnesses were chosen because of their knowledge of the subjects which they presented. It was not a partisan approach by any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, I would think that more of the witnesses were Republicans and Democrats, including the man who was a principal architect of the Republican platform last time and the former Republican Secretary of State. So I think the hearings were completely objective. I say that because a minority view filed by Senator Bush and by Congressman Curtis, but not filed by my colleague, Mr. Javits, seemed to take the opposite point of view. Now, these hearings, from my observation, did two things. They showed that what's happening in Europe particularly and other regions of the world present both an opportunity and a challenge. Certainly an opportunity. The vitality of the common market, to my way of thinking, is a real enigma to the people in the Kremlin. These people live by Marxism, and to them this is a Bible. It's all spelled out. Capitalism and the free society is supposed to collapse, and Europe is supposed to collapse, and then finally the only bastion left would be the United States, and surrounded by a hostile communist world, we too would collapse. But the common market has proved just exactly the opposite. Here, six nations joined together for economic purposes have shown a vitality the like of which no one dreamed of. They are growing at an economic rate exceeding, 8%?
Something like that.
There's full employment, some places overemployment.
Which, incidentally, is twice the growth rate of our own.
Yes, there's superabundance. And this, theoreticians, if you might call them that, in the Kremlin, is a complete puzzle. It really hits them in the most vulnerable spot, namely their philosophical spot. This is proof positive that their dogmatic approach to economics is wrong. Now, in addition to that, this means that you have a vital Europe, a third force, politically capable of standing on its own feet and opposing the spread of Soviet communism and Chinese communism, a military potential capable to the Soviet bloc, incapable, comparable to our own. But it's also a challenge. We refer to the new plants, the automated production, the wage rates, which are somewhat lower than our own, the ability to compete in third markets. This means that if we work with the common market countries, then we advance together. But if the Soviets now, in desperation, succeed in driving a wedge between the common market countries and our own country, then they would have gained as a result of the common market. So I say that it's a great opportunity, but it's also a very, very great challenge to the United States.
Well, Mr. Church, let's get down to cases on this trade legislation. Now, perhaps Congressman Boggs would be a little more reluctant to speak to this quite as specifically as I will because of his committee responsibility, and I can understand and indeed not only sympathize but agree, though I hope he'll be found on this side because it's definitely consistent with his ideology. But what we're trying to do now is to get away from the fact that we have very little to give under the reciprocal trade agreements left. We've negotiated out about all the allowability that the president had. In addition, the act expires. In addition, the new way of dealing with the common market will not allow us to negotiate on a product-by-product basis as we did under the reciprocal trades agreements law, so that we have to have some different approach. And the different approach is some authority which will be a percentage approach in a whole group of products. That seems to be the way in which to meet this issue. Now, the Congress can adequately protect itself, even if it gives such authority to the president, within limits. It might be a third, it might be a half, it might be 25% when we get through arguing it out, by retaining a strong veto power, and such a veto power is in the Reciprocal Trade Agreements Act now, and by limiting this authority to a period of years. I think the administration wants 5 years. My guess is all they're going to get is 3. But in any case, it will free our hands to deal in this area, as they must be freed, and I don't see that it will jeopardize the ultimate control of the Congress at all.
There's just one thing that seems to me to be each of you has done. Neither of you has said whether you thought we should actually join the common market. And I'm thinking beyond that to a free world common market. Is this something we're going to have to approach rather slowly, Congressman Boggs?
Well, I don't think we should join the common market. I think that we should be in a position to negotiate with the common market. It may be, as years go on, that the whole complexion of things will change. But one can only approach problems from his own knowledge. And at the present time, I certainly don't think it required of us or necessary for us, or would I think it be wise for us to join the common market, because this would rather give the impression, as I see it, of the great industrial developed countries somewhat ganging up on the underdeveloped countries of the world. And I'm not certain that this would be a good thing at all.
Well, I would say on that we ought to engage in contractual arrangements with a common market, which is what I think we're both talking about. I do not see that the way is open for us to join the common market for the following reasons. The common market has not yet shown its willingness to deal with the Latin American problem, which is so vital to us, on an equal basis with its own former dependencies in Africa. In addition, it has not yet shown a readiness to take its fair share of what the low-wage areas produce, like Hong Kong and Japan. And it has also not yet shown a willingness to organize with us in order to give some opportunity to the newly developing countries, whether it's India or the African countries, in terms of some limited industrial development on their part. For all those reasons, I think a lot more progress has to be made, not only with what we're willing to give, but what we're all going to get, in order to arrive at a state where we might consider, perhaps, with clearer eyes, the idea of joining in some fashion into a common market. I don't think we're ready for that yet.
I think we might get back to a moment to Senator Javits' reference to whether or not Congress will act meaningfully in this field. It so happens that I am on the Ways and Means Committee in the House, which must originate this legislation. As you know, tax and appropriation measures under the Constitution must originate in the House of Representatives. And tariff matters being tax matters, they must originate in the House Committee on Ways and Means. Now, it's only been since the adoption of the Hull Program back in the mid-30s that Congress delegated to some extent to the President the power to act in the field of tariffs. Prior to that time, as all of us know, Congress itself set the tariff rates. This was an unbelievable job. The last experience with it was the Smoot-Hawley tariff in the late 20s, and everyone became convinced that this was certainly not the function of individual congressmen. Now, in recent years, two concepts have grown up in the trade agreements program. One of them is the peril point, and one of them is the escape clause. Put in simple language, they mean this. If in negotiations carried on by our country, it appears that the confection of an agreement would endanger certain domestic industries, then that agreement cannot be entered into. That is the peril point approach. The effect of that, of course, is to substantially block negotiations before they ever really get underway. The peril point, in some ways, may be a much greater deterrent to effective negotiation than the escape clause, because the escape clause does not come into effect until after negotiations have been completed and an agreement has been entered into. And even under those circumstances, the findings of the Tariff Commission are not final until subscribed to by the President. But in any event, these two provisions have been written into the law since 1947. And if we're to have effective bargaining with the common market, and for that matter with any other regions that may develop, regional arrangements that may develop in the world, the President is going to, as Senator Javits said, is going to have greater authority and greater flexibility. And these deterrents to trade, in my opinion, are either going to have to be removed from the law or amended to some extent.
Well, believe it or not, Senator, these tariff matters are interesting, but I do want to talk about a couple of other things. I understand, Senator Javits, a new proposal in the care for the aged field.
Yes,
how does it differ briefly from from current legislation?
Well, it differs from the proposal of the administration, the so-called Anderson-King bill, in that it, though it adopts the Social Security method of financing, which represents a big leap as far as I'm concerned, and I think well as far as many others are concerned, it gives an option to the recipient of the medical care to continue his health care program, whether it's Blue Cross or Blue Shield or insurance or a trade union pension and welfare plan, and to take the cash instead of the services as far as the federal government is concerned. And I think that it also has other provisions about state administration and better, in my opinion, types of benefits that better adjust it to different types of families. But I think that cash option is such a big step forward in terms of all those people who were afraid that the federal government was going to get into the business of giving medical services, that it deserves to carry this whole proposition through.
It's a question impossible of answer, I suppose, Mr. Congressman, but do you think the House Ways and Means Committee would go for that approach?
Well, one of the great difficulties presented to this Congress is the fact that the House Ways and Means Committee has almost the whole program. Yes. And it's a question of which is the most controversial. We've been talking about tariffs, and Senator Javits and I are pretty much in agreement, but everyone here will admit that there's great controversy in the country about this issue. Now, the tax matter is also controversial. You've heard about the closing loopholes on expense accounts, the withholding of on dividends, the countless other provisions in the tax bill. Then there's so-called welfare abuse amendments. And Medicare, each one of these matters is one of great controversy. I will say this, that Senator Javits, in my opinion, has given this matter tremendous study and consideration. And I'm quite certain that the Ways and Means Committee will be very happy to have this plan, because, in my opinion, it's as broad and as comprehensive as any I've heard. I've not had opportunity to study it in detail. I've only seen what's been reported in the press.
We have just about a minute left, gentlemen. And I would like to know, because everyone in the audience listening wants to know, too, what are the possibilities of any tax cut in the foreseeable future? Senator?
Well, I don't think there's any possibility of a tax cut, but I think there is a real possibility of taking care of inequities in the tax laws, getting more out of some things, like that famous allowance for depletion in oil, and at the same time doing some things in other respects, like encouraging capital investment in automated machinery.
Well, I disagree with the Senator on percentage depletion. I think it'll stay in the law. But I do think that there will be tax adjustments, particularly in the field that I mentioned earlier, to encourage more investment in American plants.
Thank you, gentlemen, Senator Javits and Representative Boggs, for being with us on The Leading Question.
You have been listening to The Leading Question, with Wells Church as moderator. Today, Senator Jacob Javits, Republican of New York, and Congressman Hale Boggs, Democrat of Louisiana, discussed the leading question, what will Congress do on major economic matters? Produced by Ben Flynn and originating in Washington, D.C., The Leading Question has been another broadcast recorded in the public interest by CBS News. Only a station affiliated with CBS Radio can bring it to you. This has been a public affairs presentation of CBS News on the CBS Radio Network.